This is CX of M Radio, the voice of customer experience professionals.
Hello, and welcome to another World of UX podcast. This is your host, Darren Hood. Thank you, everyone, for taking the time to listen in on today. A special welcome to those of you listening for the first time. Welcome to the podcast. We are wrapping up. Finally, the series has been a long haul on this one, but we are wrapping up the topic where we're talking about the traits of sinister culture in the world of UX today, practices, mindsets, things that are being normalized, things that are being tolerated, things that are being touted, things that are being encouraged that are operating to the detriment of the discipline, detriment of individual practitioners, detriment of teams, detriment to the perception of UX. A lot of things that are going on, but a lot of people in the community are either embracing these things, they are encouraging these things, they are teaching these things, and these things ought not be. And we're going to wrap up today with this series, asterisk. We're going to wrap up this series with its breakdowns, but I want to end the series officially next time where we just talk about some of the top elements. I want to extract and do a little bit of a recap on some of the things that we've been talking about throughout this entire series. This is the longest series I've ever done, and there's quite a bit here. I am covering with number 69 on the list, but there are sub-items under each one of the topics that I'm covering in this series. There is no way I'm going to go back and count all the sub-items to provide an accurate count of the things that we've covered here. Let's just say it's 69 plus, I'll probably triple that when you think about the different sub-items that we've talked about. But I hope people, I know a lot of people actually are appreciating this. A lot of people are understanding it. A lot of people are embracing it. A lot of people are starting to learn what the action items are that should come out of this list. What types of things should we do? How do we overcome these things? I had one person recently tell me that everything I said on one recent episode, all those things were happening at their place of employment. And that person sees it. That person has an issue with it. But off the top of my head, a person like that might have anywhere from 5 to 10 people on their UX team. And there's X number of people on any given UX team that are practicing these things. That's not good. It's not good for the discipline. Again, it's not good for practitioners. It's not good for how we represent ourselves to people who are making the decisions, our support base, because every UX team has to have people in the leaderships that are supporting and endorsing what we do. And if we're engaging in sinister practices, then that's going to work against us. So that's the reason we're calling these things out. We're thankful again for people who have expressed their gratitude, their appreciation for taking the time to do this. And ironically, speaking of that, because there's a lot of people who could speak about these things, there's a lot of people who could share these things, there's a lot of people who could call these things out. And today, a lot of people just don't. They'd rather not say anything at all. They'd rather engage in a silent mode, and that's exactly what we're going to talk about today. The last topic, the last sinister trait, along with the sub-items, the last sinister trait that we're going to address in this series is what I refer to as the UX code of silence. There is a code of silence in UX today that some people, sometimes they will come right out and say that you shouldn't say certain things. Sometimes they will just try to discourage you from saying certain things. There are even people that try to bully you into not saying certain things. That's how crazy it is, where you have grown people trying to make other people not talk about certain things. It's absolutely ridiculous, especially when you consider what these things are, how they all need to be managed in order to overcome them. And when people decide to turn a blinded eye or a deaf ear, then the thing that is going on will have no opposition, and it's just going to continue to to run roughshod wherever it's operating. So really interesting today. So I'm going to give some examples of the code of silence. And let's go ahead and dive in here. The first one that comes to mind, I don't have names for these. I'm just going to talk about what they are. I know sometimes I have a name for it, but not this time. But I remember, I mean, a lot of us, we love going to UX meetups. We understand the value of community in UX. But even within UX communities, there are sinister activities, sinister practices, sinister mindsets that are designed to, whether people realize it or not, and intentions mean nothing, because if something happens, it happens. Intentions don't mean anything. And there are people, whether they intend it or not, they actually carry themselves in a way where they don't want people saying certain things. Matter of fact, a lot of people, when it comes to UX communities, a lot of people have a Pollyanna kind of mindset. They only want to talk about things that are fluffy, flowery, cotton candy, that type of sugar-coated type of things that actually hurt the people who embrace them in the long run. And I remember I went to two UX community engagements that I was involved in. Ironically, it was the same exact organization that I went to twice. And I ran into somebody once. I ran into somebody at an event that I used to work with. And they asked me how I was doing. And hey, you know me, I'm not going to mince words. I'm going to be diplomatic about it. I'm going to be professional, but I'm not going to mince words. I know there's a problem in sugarcoating things. I know that it's not good to mince words. It's just the way that you say it, the way you present it. It has to be something people can entreat easily, and it has to be something that people can partake of. In other words, it has to be something that people can understand. You can't just go around, if something is upset or if you are concerned about something, you can't just go around getting things off your chest, so to speak. It doesn't lend itself to constructivism. So anytime something is bothering us, it doesn't make sense to internalize it, because that's not good for anyone's health. But at the same time, there's a better way to present it many times. I'm all for that. I embrace that. I understand that. That's not what happened in this situation. I told somebody what was going on with me. I was telling somebody I was going through some things. I was experiencing some things that I was very concerned about. And I thought, here's the kicker, I thought I could talk to that person like an adult. And I thought that I could tell that person what was going on, express my concern. Maybe they'll say something constructive that I can embrace and implement. But that's not what happened. The person just, shh, Darren, don't say that. Don't say that. They wanted me to say nothing. Isn't it interesting that when you are experiencing maltreatment in the workplace, people want the person who's experiencing the maltreatment to be quiet and internalize. Nobody ever wants the people doing the dirty stuff to stop. Nobody ever wants the perp to stop perping. Nobody ever wants the people that are behaving in an inhumane way to change their stripes, so to speak. For some reason, the pressure, the burden is always put on the person who's actually suffering the injustice. And that simply is not appropriate. It's downright sinister. It's like somebody experiencing a crime and then holding the person who's the victim, to hold that person in an innocent light. And I hate to use the word victim, but for lack of a better word right now, that's going to have to do, while letting the criminal get away. Again, the perp, the protagonist, the aggressor. And that's really, really sad. So that person didn't want me to say anything. And another instance in that same group, I experienced something quite similar, where we had, everybody was talking, and these are the days where, I mean, the first one was in person. This one was on Zoom, and somebody was talking about certain things. Whether there was actually some new UXers there, and some people were asking for tips about certain things. And again, you know me, I'm going to tell you what you need to know, no holds barred. We're going to tell it to you in a way that I'm going to give it to you straight. And it's not a doom and gloom thing. It's not doomsaying. It's just a realistic perspective. And the person running the meeting just staring. She actually shushed me. The person shushed me. And I just shook my head. I'm going, wow, that's just really sad. So I'm going to be shushed. What I'm telling the person about, they're going to experience that thing. Either it's going to be 3 months from now, 6 months from now, a year from now, they're going to experience it. And if you don't tell them what I was talking to them about, they're going to experience it. And then what are you going to do? Oh, they're going to do the same thing they always do. And I do have a caveat with this one. They're usually going to tell that person to stop saying it, or that person will already be conditioned to not share certain things. So they don't get an answer. They don't get any direction. They don't get any understanding. And they're being subjected to something that defies all logic. And now people want to rob them of having an answer for that. That's just inappropriate. So this whole code of silence thing where, oh, we're not going to talk about this and we're not going to talk about that, is not an appropriate way. It's not an appropriate mode of operation that we should have. And it really becomes problematic to the people who had need for insight. And then people want to take that away from them. Not cool at all. On another personal note, oh, by the way, yeah, the only people who experience that kind of thing are the people who are willing to speak up. And there's very few of us out here in UX that are actually speaking up about this today. There are people, they will. I have seen instances, I know of situations where people will complain about the types of things you hear on this show. They complain about the types of things you might see on social media. But, and we're gonna go the long way with this one because we're going to come back to this later. They'll complain about what I'm doing. They'll tell me not to do it. Some people will see a post on social media and they'll troll it. And really, they're trying to get me to stop. When you don't have to post a response. If you don't, can't get into what's being said, just move along. I'm a grown person. I'm an adult. I'm not going to stop. You're not going to bully me. None of the above. It's going to work. I'm going to say what I'm going to say. I'm going to say what has to be said. I'm going to say what's going to benefit people. And it's interesting how people try to intimidate you. And that's another aspect of the code of silence, that you have some people that literally utilize the mindset or the methodology of intimidation to try to stop you from saying and doing certain things. Not a good thing. And you have these people, they'll complain about what I'm doing to other people, of course. But these same people, they see other people doing things that are blatantly wrong, blatantly damaging to the UX community, blatantly sneaky, and say absolutely nothing. And that's that cowardice I've talked about in other parts of the sinister culture, where people have this cowardice component. The people who all they want to talk about is how to do the work. They know these other things are going on. Hey, let's talk about the design system. Hey, let's talk about how to best do journey mapping. Hey, let's talk about how we can best go about running a design sprint. Let's talk about this for the next 50 years. We won't talk about any of these other things. That's not right. We all know these things are happening, and the only people that aren't experiencing them are either the ones that are doling it out or they're entitled. And that's that other caveat to the other thing. Some people are saying and doing what I'm doing, but they don't get addressed. Getting ahead of myself because this is further down the list. There's people who don't get addressed because they're entitled. There are literally people who can talk about the same exact thing and say it the same exact way. And people will tolerate them if they are part of the entitled majority, whether it's racially oriented, whether it's sexually oriented, and those entitlement levels vary. It depends on what circle you're in. Sometimes it is a different gender. Sometimes it is the different race, but it varies and it shifts. But when you have people who are entitled people don't usually suffer any sinister treatment. They don't, because people are afraid to do it, or they're usually in power, so nobody's going to do anything to or with them. So critical to understand that today, but you can't complain about what's being done and then turn around and let other people get away with things that are it's almost difficult to say far worse, because it implies that what I'm doing is wrong. It's not wrong, but they'll make an issue out of the thing that's not wrong and then take the thing that is wrong and act like nothing's wrong with it. And that's sinister as well. So just something else to consider. Next one. There are a lot of people in the UX community that they put on a front like they respect other people. they'll say they respect other people, especially if they're on camera or a social media post or whatever. They'll pretend to be appreciative. They'll pretend to be supportive. They'll pretend to be in someone's corner, but really, they only use it as a cloak to discredit the same person. And there have been instances I know of times, and I'm not, again, other people have said, I'm glad you're saying this because I experienced it too. It's not just me, where people will pretend to endorse and support, and then as soon as they get an opportunity, they'll cast shade upon the person that they supposedly respected and embraced. There are people who are engaging in this reconnoitering we talked about recently. It's related to that. It's this two-faced kind of dissimulatory kind of representation that takes place that's not appropriate. If you don't support somebody, don't support them. If you support them, but don't put on a front. And some people do it just so they can get close because they think that the closer they get, the more damage they can do. And that's the way that they operate. Again, I've seen people in live shows. I have seen people claim that they support people and then in the same breath do something that actually it disparages the same person that they claim to respect. So not a good thing, and only certain people are going to see it. Only certain people are going to face up to it when they see it. And we need to be careful about things like that, folks. It's just downright sinister. Next up, I have responded to statements on social media. They only reply, or these people, they'll reply in a manner that I know that it's a coded message. In other words, they say one thing, but what it said, it actually means something else, especially when those people have been engaged in reconnoitering and they have certain things that they say that are actually code. And I've recognized that code. And when you get treated like this a lot, you become really good at spotting it. But people, they spot certain things or they'll say certain things. I know sometimes people will say, they'll hear somebody say something, and then they'll say, so anyway, and then they'll move on, which is really code for, we don't care what he just said, listen to what I'm about to say. That kind of thing is passive aggressive, flat out. It's flat out passive aggressive. It's very, it's sinister. It is misleading. It is disrespectful. It is, it undermines the individual that the coded statement is directed at. I've had people say things to me, and I know that it means, and I'm just going to flat out say this, they're going to say, it's like they may as well just say it, shut up, you uppity Negro, because a lot of people, when they hear a person of African-American descent speak with authority, they get offended just because we're speaking with authority. Some of you, I know, can't relate to that, don't understand it, or you're just shocked by it, and cool, and that's all fine and dandy. But there are people that do that, and they get upset because you're saying something of note. Sometimes people will come to me and they'll say, well, what do you mean when you use that word? What do you mean? I'm like, and I'm thinking, what are you asking me that for? I've talked about this before. Why are you asking me that? Do you have a dictionary? Well, if you have a dictionary, please note that a lot of words will have anywhere from 2 to 7 definitions for that one word, and the usage or the definition of the word is dependent upon the context. If you don't understand the word, look it up. That's what everybody does. We were taught to do that when we were in the 2nd and 3rd grade. So let's just look the word up. But people will ask me what I'm meaning, not because they don't know what the word means. It's because in their mind, I'm not supposed to know what the word means. So I know when that's what they're really saying. I can tell that, and I just sort of laugh inside. I laugh, and I move on. And sometimes people say that, and I understand they don't mean anything by it at all, and they're not saying, shut up, you uppity Negro, but they are saying, do you really know what you're talking about? Because in their mind, I'm not supposed to know, and there's no way in the world that you're using a word that I know. Isn't that too advanced for you? That's hilarious stuff, but people are doing it. And posted a statement to LinkedIn recently, and a person was upset. No, actually, I'm sorry, I forgot. Somebody shared one of my book recommendation lists. And the person responded and they said, I don't know who Darren Hood is. And basically, who cares who he is? This information about emotional intelligence that he's talking about, this is outdated stuff. And they proceeded to make all of these ridiculous claims. That person was actually mad because they probably never heard of a person of color talk about emotional intelligence. And what was ironic about the dialogue was that the person proceeded to demonstrate that they were deficient of EQ, which is something I talk about a lot when I'm talking about EQ. So it's really weird how these types of things happen. And, you know, they're going to happen, and you deal with it and you move on. That's the EQ way to respond to such a thing. But, I mean, you know, really sad. I mean, I've seen people, you'll post something and then somebody will respond with a very fancy and overcomplicated reply. That's one of the ways that people are trying to tell you to shut up. Nobody can do anything with the reply the person said. The reply that was posted. Nobody can do anything with it. They're using terminology and all other types of things, methodologies. The cognitive load is off the charts. And yeah, in social media, keep the cognitive load low. Always keep the cognitive load low or there will be no social activities taking place. So really, really sad. So I've seen people give the fancy, overcomplicated reply. They call themselves speaking above you. I just think it's funny. And then you have instances where people they'll go the straw man route because they're really trying to silence you. And so they'll fabricate something. They'll take what you said, convert it into a straw man argument, and then use it to in the fabrication of that issue to exercise what they perceive to be a supremacy on their side that other people don't have, and they don't realize how they're really sort of disavowing themselves in the process. And I wish people wouldn't do that, but the truth is it happens. So yeah, really, really sad. So when social media, so the funny thing about social media, we always say it's social media, and people who don't have social skills is gonna stand out quite a bit. And you have to understand what's going on. But a lot of times when they're telling you to just shut up, it's important to understand that and make sure you do not shut up. Next, there is, whether people want to admit it or not, there is pretty much the equivalent of a UX Illuminati. There are people in UX, and they have these little social groups, if you will, these little societies. I'm just going to bust on them. I know they're out there. I don't know who's in them. I know some people that are in them. I don't know everybody that's in them. But these people, they're usually filled with entitled folks. They're usually no minorities or maybe one or two. There's always a token minority everywhere you go when that kind of thing is going on. But these kind of people, they have their Illuminati. I remember there was a situation, and I can't say too much, but I know of situations where people were trying to get into these UX Illuminatis, and they were rejected. They don't send you notice that you get rejected. They just don't accept you, and then you know that you didn't get accepted, and you know what was going down, and the person who probably recommended you probably got chewed out for having done it. But it's really interesting how all that stuff works. So there is a UX Illuminati, whether you like it or not, and they only accept certain people into their groups, and if somebody doesn't have those certain qualifiers, you're not going to get in. I'm not going to get in because I'm outspoken. The UX Illuminati is one of the groups that operates with a code of silence. It is a main part of how they operate. They will say nothing about certain things, all the things, how they don't care that UX has gone into the toilet in the last 10 to 12 years. They don't care at all because they're not being affected. They're still making their money. They still have their reputations. And as long as they're not going to get touched, they're not going to say a single solitary thing. So this UX Illuminati, just crazy stuff. They decide, if you didn't get the message, they decide who to elevate and who to suppress within their groups. And if you're not accepted by them, that's it. They definitely don't want anything to do with me, because I'm too outspoken. I could be of another race and they still wouldn't want anything to do with me because I'm too outspoken. So, no. And I care about the discipline, which lets you know where they stand. They don't care about the discipline. So there is a UX Illuminati, and that is their mode of operation, the code of silence. Akin to that, next up, there's, we talked about this too already, but it still deserves to be on this list. There's a lot of people in UX today, and this is going to play into our last point for today's session and for this topic, that there's a group of people in UX that their goal is to, and they encourage and they embrace the whole cancel culture thing. And so they like going around for whatever reason, they like canceling people. The funny thing about it is this cancellation is only based on entitlement. It's not the UX Illuminati. There are people who are nowhere near the UX Illuminati. And their goal is, their thing is, that they go around canceling people for all the wrong reasons. They do it based on the isms of racism, sexism, nepotism, cronyism, ageism, whatever it is. All of those things. This is ism-based cancellation, or it has the entitlement that's tied to that, I should say. And the funny thing about these kind of people, to give you an example of what types of things they're doing, is when these people, a lot of times, I delivered a talk, won't tell you what the topic was, won't tell you what happened. But these people, they'll hear you say something when you're delivering a talk. I might as well be direct and personal with it, more personal with this, to help people get it. They don't like what I'm talking about. That happens a lot. They can't disprove. And they know that what I'm saying is true because they turn around. Some of them are college professors. They teach it in their classes. Some of them do deliver talks. They talk about it in their talks. But then when I talk about it, it's not fair game. Because sometimes I do talk about the work itself. Sometimes I do talk about information architecture. I do talk about UX maturity. I do talk about heuristics and usability. I do talk about research. I do talk about these other things, interaction design. I talk about these things. And when I talk about it, it like all of a sudden, everything I'm talking about is taboo, even though they know what I'm saying is accurate. They try to separate the content from the individual because they're trying to cancel the person. So at any rate, I spoke at one event and I said something, and the person, I think the person was upset. I can only tell you how I felt about it. The person was upset because they are a known expert based on the topic I was talking about. And a lot of times when somebody is an expert and somebody else talks about something where they're an expert, some people, they have a narcissistic streak, frankly, and they don't like the fact that somebody else is talking about their thing. So the person twisted my words, and I don't want anybody to know the exact situation, so I'm not going to give you the exact example, but I made a statement. The person kept saying that I kept saying something else. They kept flipping it, and they were gaslighting me in the process. They kept trying to get me to think that I said something I didn't say. I know what I said, and it wasn't even up for interpretation. I made a direct statement, so there was nothing to interpret. The person just kept flipping it, and they were talking to me, and I kept saying, no, I said, and then they kept repeating it, and I kept repeating what I was saying. No, I said X. And you keep saying, I said J. I didn't say J, I said X. The person keeps trying to tell me that I said J, and I keep repeating, no, I actually said X. So the person just kept on and kept on and kept on. And I'm sure this person left that conversation and then went and started telling people about the J piece when I was talking about X. They just continued to want to, you can hear, and you know that's what people are going to do. We haven't had interactions since that day. And some years ago, we haven't interacted since. And anybody in that person's circles, those people don't interact with me because I probably went out telling them, oh, Darren Hood was talking about Jay, but we know that it's really, that's really not Jay. That's not what this is. And it's really sad that they're willing to work to that extent because they just don't want me to have a space where I'm helping. Like it's against the law for me to occupy space in UX. It's amazing. It's ridiculous. And again, it's just plain sinister. So cancellation will take place when people do this, but they get away with it because they're entitled and nobody will question the person. I've seen situations where people know that somebody is engaging in cancellation, that it's unjust, it's unfair and inaccurate. But they have so much respect for the person doing the canceling that they don't question anything. They don't ask for any evidence. They don't ask for any examples. They just believe it and they move on. And that type of thing is bad for the discipline, folks. It's bad for the discipline. I shared a story recently about a situation where some of us used to do a live show, and there was someone that I used to engage with, a person very passionate about the discipline. I don't know what the person is today. I have no idea, because the person ended up labeling those of us that were doing the show as a pack of wild dogs. Even though, I mean, and I don't know what anybody else did. I know I didn't have an interaction with them. And so I was guilty by association, apparently. And so I was given the attribution of being a wild dog, even though I didn't bite anybody. I didn't chase anybody. I didn't abuse anybody. I didn't growl at anybody. I didn't bark at anybody. But I got called a wild dog. And so I got canceled basically by that individual. By association, you do have to watch your association today. It can happen if you're running in a certain group and certain things get done. People are going to automatically think you're part of X, Y, and Z. I have no idea what engagements the other people in the show had with this individual. I just know that I was labeled. But it's really sad when people do that, because sometimes you'll group somebody in and you'll cancel somebody. And like, did that person really even do anything deserving of that treatment? We really need to be adults. Stop acting like a bunch of fifth graders or third graders or second graders, whatever. It doesn't really matter. You get my drift. We need to stop doing that, because we do ourselves a disservice. And a lot of times we'll cut off somebody, our access to somebody, simply because something somebody said, and it's not really true. Now, the benefits that you gained previously from interacting with that person, where are they? Where are you getting them from? And so we want to be careful. I've had to learn how to do that. I've always been careful about that kind of thing. I've always had people come to me and talk to me about somebody. I never had that experience. If you had that experience with that individual, you had that experience with that individual. I did not. I don't have any issues with that individual. Feel free to keep interacting with me, but I'm not going to back up from them just because you backed up. I'm not going to play that little childish game. And I know it to be a childish game, and so I refuse to be a part of it. If I withdraw someone from my presence or vice versa, then it's going to be because they earned it. And I'm going to make a fully conscious decision that I have really some sound reasoning for. Otherwise, we don't want to get into that, because it's very sinister and it's not good for us or the discipline. So somebody said, someone say something, you know, and you know different, don't fall for that. And don't play the game of believing that he say, she say. We know what he say, she say is. Let's not even go down that road. We're going to wrap up this topic by talking about something that, I mean, this just happened. And ironically, it fits into the narrative of this issue of the code of silence in UX circles today. And it really is a great illustration as to how replete the discipline is with it, with regard to the culture of UX and the community of UX. It's really interesting how people have, again, normalized this and look at the contrast I'm about to present. A lot of people know about the recent UXPA International debacle. There was a person who received a Lifetime Achievement Award. And when the Lifetime Achievement Award went out, a lot of people, an outcry began. The outcry was huge. There were people all over social media complaining, wondering why this person got this award, because there was a lot of people that were saying that there were some some sexual misbehaving on behalf of this individual. And you have to ask yourself, was it right for people to complain or protest the Lifetime Achievement Award for this individual, considering the person's reputation? Generally speaking, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And for people that, for there to have been an outcry, kudos to the people who spoke up. Kudos to the people who wrote the UXPA. Kudos to all the people who made this thing known, because it was not common knowledge. I had no knowledge of it, of what had happened. And it was, according to reports, it was not hearsay. So thinking about the last point I just made, this is not somebody making a statement about an individual and it's not known. It was well known that these things supposedly have happened. And I just keep using the word supposedly only because I don't have firsthand knowledge of it. So I'm not denying people's witnesses. I'm just saying, I'm just saying what they said. And when I'm saying what somebody else says, I'm not going to say it like I know it firsthand. I don't. I only know it second, third hand. So huge outcry. The UXPA rescinded the award. According to the email that went out, it was due to unforeseen circumstances. We'll talk about that in a minute. A lot of people sounded off. I know in my post where I shared the news that they had rescinded it. So, Lifetime Achievement Award, huge outcry, rescinding of the award, where the UXPA, you know what, let's just get into it now. The UXPA did not accept responsibility for their misguided move. The UXPA did not handle things the right way. The UXPA never should have given the award based on the information that's come forth, never should have given the award to that person. And so it wasn't unforeseen. They didn't do due diligence. And when people make a statement like that, that's a type of gaslighting in and of itself. Unforeseen circumstances. And everybody's supposed to just believe that and go on. That's a type of gaslighting, folks. Anytime somebody glazes something over and tries to get somebody to believe something other than what really occurred, that's gaslighting at its base. At its base, I should say. That's gaslighting. So really sad. I was the director of education for all of 30 days or so, and I stepped down because I recognized certain things, but this isn't about me today. I'm just mentioning that because people have asked about it, and I spent one episode explaining it, and that was it. But it's interesting that this is coming back up, because the reasons why all this is happening and the reason why I stepped down are related. But again, we'll leave it at that. So, but this whole thing, it reminded me, there was a skit on Saturday Night Live this past weekend. And those of you that watch it, you might remember this. And they did a skit about people pleasing. And again, that's another sinister trait. And I've talked about it to some extent. But how did the guy get the award? Don't know. We don't know if anybody questioned the award to begin with. If they did, nobody said anything, and they may never say anything. We just don't know. But there's a lot of people pleasing going on here, especially when it came to people crying out, the big outcry, and then the award being rescinded. That's an act of people pleasing a lot of times. People willing to do what the masses want. It's not about following ethics. It's not about doing the right thing. It's about doing whatever is going to make people happy. And when all you do is govern yourself based on what makes people happy, then that means that mores, principles, critical elements that should be guiding our behavior, they don't even exist. It's all about what somebody wants in a given situation or what people are crying for. You know, is this what the people want? It's almost like back in the Roman days, looking to see how the crowd is going to respond, and then Caesar's going to put thumbs up or thumbs down based on what the crowd is looking for. No real decisions being made with leadership. Those aren't leaders. That's not leadership. This is one of the biggest sinister traits in UX today, is that a lot of people in leadership roles or operating as leaders are not leaders. And it hurts us when you have non-leaders in leadership roles. Interestingly, a lot of people who would be good leaders don't want to be leaders. A lot of people who would be good leaders don't want to be in that position because they know they have to deal with the non-leaders and don't want to deal with them. And ironically, the narcissists, all they want is power. So we have a conundrum because of things like this today. And so it's really, really sad. But again, they rescinded the award, and some people even went to an extent of they want to make sure this doesn't happen again. So it wasn't enough that the award was rescinded. Then now there's this equivalent of a petition that's out there, and everybody got a link to a Google document where you can go in and add your name so they can know all the people who are upset about the mishandling of this award situation by the UXPA International. Let UXPA International know that you weren't pleased. Put your name on the document. And I saw that post. I looked at the document. I did. And I was already laughing. When I saw the outcry, I laughed. When I saw people celebrating the fact that the award had been rescinded, I laughed. When I saw the petition, or the equivalent of the petition, oh, I hooted. I just laughed. You know why? I made a discovery. What did I discover? I discovered, now we're talking about the code of silence, right? And how there's all types of, I've been talking about all kind of dirty traits, behaviors, mindsets in UX. And of all the things I've talked about in all of these episodes, these people are saying practically nothing. Practically nothing. They just let it go on. A lot of these people even empower the people. I mean, so what I learned is the U.S. community can speak up. They can. They do have a voice. They will say something when it hits them the wrong way. If we're just saying the person didn't behave proper and they were guilty of sexual abuse, if that's the case, is that wrong? You better believe it's wrong. And it always will be wrong. For the record, it goes both ways too. There's all kinds of sexual abuse taking place in the workplace, not just in UX circles, that people don't know about and they say nothing about, but I'm not going to get on that today. There's a problem. It was addressed, but there's bigger problems that are not being addressed. Why are people so quiet? They have a problem with what the award winner did, but they don't have a problem with people doing the same exact things to UX. The irony is flat out off the charts. They don't care if UX is subjected to abuse. They don't care if people are getting rich off the discipline for having brought no value and prostituting and bastardizing what UX is about. And people see it and do absolutely nothing. They see people all over the place getting these director and manager roles in UX without having an ounce of qualifications and say nothing. They see people getting hired all over the place, seniors being discarded, and now with people favoring hiring the newer, more inexperienced person. When at one time it was hard for them to get it, they'll get hired before the more experienced person these days. Is anybody saying anything about that? No, they leave it to people like me to say something. The guy that, because I'm of African-American descent, people are going to, for the most part, ignore me anyway. So it's really crazy, isn't it? The irony is insane. They address the award situation, but if somebody is doing something that derails UX, they say absolutely nothing. They address the award situation, but they want me to be quiet. This is insane. We have a voice. We've proven that in the last week. People have proven that UX folks will speak up. Can you speak up about the way that the boot camps turn the discipline upside down and redefine what UX is? Can you speak up about how wrong it is to present this UX/UX UI? Thing, as if that's a thing, as if UX and UI are interchangeable. Can you speak up about that? Can you speak up about the fact that the discipline has been run in the toilet by people who don't know what UX is? Can you speak up about the fact that design thinking is really a prostitution of UX principles? Can we address that today? But interestingly, the people who subject me to silence have no problem with entitled people, as we said earlier, being vocal, and then they say nothing about all the crazy things, and things I've highlighted in this series, I'm one of a handful of people who is offended by, understands the threat of, understands the detrimental impact of. I'm one of the few people that does that today, that knows it and is trying to do something about it and trying to right the ship. I'm thankful. I know many of the people who are, not the people who are listening to what we're saying and then going back to their communities and talking about what we're saying as if they're making a discovery. I've seen those people too, shysters. There's no way in the world that somebody with a year and a half of experience knows some of the things that they're talking about. They're just trying to make a name for themselves. And other people need to speak up about that stuff. I actually have directly approached people. You're mentioning this, but you said you only have X amount of experience. How do you know these things? There's no way in the world you know this stuff firsthand. You got it from somebody else. Probably got some of it from me. Ridiculous things. We have to speak up. If you see somebody trying to silence somebody else, and you know that what they're trying to do is inappropriate, let that person know that you're not going for it, that you're not falling for that, that you're not going to partner with them to silence and to cancel somebody. Do that today. Take a stand. Why do you say that about such and such a person? No, I'm not supporting you in that. That's wrong. That's absolutely wrong. And if somebody else is wrong, we're going to cry out about that. We have to get the discipline back on track. And whether it's Figma or other tools or Mural, or whether it's information architecture or UX research or anything like that, people can talk about the tools and the methods and the techniques and the deliverables, the artifacts all day long. But this sinister trait thing, it's wiping us out. It's wiping us out. And if we don't realize that every discipline is limited in its success by its degree of ethics, and not by the degree of ethics by its individual practitioners, but by a discipline as the whole. Accounting thrives because ethics is put in the right place. The medical field thrives because of the ethics that are in the right place. You name the discipline, and it's the ethical practice of that discipline that helps that discipline to skyrocket. When ethics are not embraced, which goes all the way down to the way we treat each other, the way we perceive things, the way we interact, the whole nine yards, it's not until we uplift that that we can put our discipline back where it's supposed to be. Anybody with me? Let's be about getting this thing right today, and let's overcome the sinister traits of UX that are at work in our community today. Folks, that is it. We finally finished this series. It's done, except for the little asterisk section next week, where we want to just call out some of the segments and share them with folks, and just as a reminder. So we'll work on that this week and make sure we talk about the top 10 of the sinister traits. But until then, it's time to sign off. So until next time, this is Darren Hood, the host of The World of UX, wishing everyone all the best. Until next time, happy UXing, everybody.
Thanks for joining us for this session of CX of M Radio. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe to the show, and visit cxofm.org for more resources.